Well, for the sermon today, I thought I would do a little bit of a change-up, but it's basically a subject that's hot in the news because of what's happened since we have a new president and perhaps what's happened in the last 40, 50 years leading up to present day, a situation that's taking place that we thought would take perhaps 30, 40 years ago. If you go to a search library of the Plain Truth magazine, what you'll find is a subject that is listed more than any other subject, and so what I'm speaking on today. I was a little bit surprised that there were so many articles on it. This is Good News Magazine, mostly the Plain Truth magazine through the years. I've wanted to give this subject for probably a year off and on, but it seems like this is really the right time based on what's happened in the news even as of last Friday. So if you think of the major news of last Friday and a percentage drop in the Dow Jones or the NASDAQ or whatever, then you'll realize I'm talking about trade war. Trade war. When the president was elected, I called my brother, who's a Democrat, and I think I've mentioned this to you before, but I said, Steve, look forward to trade war. And that's exactly what's happened. From God's standpoint of view, we look at things differently, of course. We're not up there. We don't see a 6,000-year plan, do we? What we see is basically what's happened in our lifetime, and we base most everything in my life. It would be based on basically everything from the Eisenhower administration up to this time. And so we don't see as God does. He looks at his overall 6,000-year plan. This is what he's looking at. And so when he puts a man in office, as he does, he's the one that puts men, women in their positions. We know that he's operating not based on what we desire, what we want, what we look at, what we hear in the media. It's based on speeding things up, slowing things down, allowing people to give in to their nature, allowing nations to spread or be diminished, to cease to exist. As we know, many nations that existed 4,000 years ago have lost their name. Egypt has maintained its name. It's basically been there forever. Israel in the same way. So what God has done is put a man in office who will want to make America great. And that is a noble desire. It really is. We all want to see America great. But what God saw and what all of us saw in his campaigns, and by the way, I said this to my brother, not based on any vision that I had, we all heard the campaign rhetoric, and he's one of the few presidents, actually, who wants to continue and follow through with what he said on the campaign. But what it's doing is it's fulfilling prophecy. It's fulfilling what you find in Deuteronomy 28, where you find blessings and cursings that are mentioned. I'm going to go to, and we'll come back to Deuteronomy 28, but I'm going to first of all go to Revelation 18. This is a chapter on the economics in the United States and around the world. And I don't believe there's another place in the Bible where we find more time spent on this subject, and that is the downfall of a system, economic system, basically around the world. Here we find chapter 18, and this is coming off of Deuteronomy 17, where it's talking about Babylon being destroyed. But it says in verse 1, "After these things I saw another angel coming down from heaven, having great authority, and the earth was illuminated with his glory. And he cried mightily with a loud voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen, and has become a habitation of demons, a prison for every foul spirit, and a cage for every unclean and hated bird. For all the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication." Now, we could spend a little bit more time on the whole chapter, but I'll hit some highlights. The end of verse 3, "The merchants of the earth have become rich through the abundance of her luxury." So we find as we move down in verse 7, glorified herself and lived luxuriously. Verse 9, the kings of the earth had committed fornication, which is, basically the ultimate in lust, I've always thought, would be fornication and adultery. Just the ultimate action that you can find. I'm sure there's others. But you come down to verse 11, the merchants of the earth will weep and mourn over her, for no one buys their merchandise anymore. You find the same thing that in verse 17, for in 1 hour such great riches came to nothing, and every shipmaster, all who travel by ships, sailors, and as many as trade on the sea, stood at a distance. So the ships of the past were responsible for carrying the goods that were spread around the world. I don't know how many of you have visited the treasure ship in Kansas City. It's the Treasure Ship Arabia, I believe, is the name of it. And it was right before the Civil War, where when the Missouri was the Wide Muddy, that ships would get hung up. Now, the ships were shallow in themselves. You couldn't be pulled or, they have steamships, I suppose, at that time. Yeah, they did. This one was actually a steamship. And so you couldn't have anything more than a very, very shallow ship. And there would be the tree roots that would come up, the trunk and the roots of the tree, and it would sink many, many ships. Now, what was on that treasure ship was amazing. When you go through it's kind of a museum, I suppose, but when you see everything that was on that ship, it's absolutely amazing. The merchandise that they were sending on to the West. You think that we have tremendous tools these days. It looks like that our tools aren't much better, you know, the garden tools, than what existed then. And the shoes and the parasols and, you know, the cooking utensils and hammers and, you know, just everything you can think of in the way of needing to build a building. So if you haven't been there, I would highly recommend it. But ships were responsible for carrying, so that's why they didn't say the steam engines, you know, those who were running the steam engines were whaling, or those who were flying the airplanes were whaling. They would today, but basically the principle is that the economy is gone. It's done for. And why is that? Well, we'll come back to it a little bit later toward the end of the sermon. I don't have that many scriptures here because I thought it would be good to go into the past and read some of the highlights of some of these plain truth articles back in the 70s and in the 80s. It is amazing what is said back there. Now, we might think that the church was way too early in talking about trade war, but when we recognize what was going on with Japan in the 70s and 80s, they were the ones that were causing us problems. And, of course, hinged with the Japanese would be the European Union. Not too many people talked about a threat from Europe back in the 70s and 80s. We knew what was going to happen. We understood it would be the United States of Europe. We understood it would be a tremendous economic power. But the world, of course, didn't think that way. So when you look at this, it's like, and for our kids who didn't exist, I existed. I was 25 years old or something. Actually, when European market came together, I was 3 years old, I think, is all. When you stop to think of what we were predicting back in the 70s and 80s, we might think, well, we were way off as a church. But when you start to think that one day is as 1,000 years to God, I'll just give you an example of what I think God thinks. 1,000 years is equal to a day, so 100 years is equal to a tenth of a day, which would be really not 2 hours and 40 minutes because you got a 60-minute period around the clock. But let's just say for simplicity's sake, that is, And for my lack of brain power to put it all together, you know, and I didn't put it down on paper. But let's say it was 2 hours and 40 minutes for 100 years. So if we're 50 years off in God's sight, God could say, well, the church missed it by an hour and 20 minutes. You see what I'm getting at? God's point of view is really different. So it was at the end of the age when these predictions were there. And when you start to think of 50 articles, some of them repeated, maybe 5 years, 7 years later. Granted, that would have happened. But when we stop to think of what we were saying in the 1970s and 1980s about a biblical prophecy, then we can understand that we're close. And those who are older remember some of these articles. If we go to Deuteronomy 28, Deuteronomy 28. And I'll just place in some of these articles and some of these highlighted, very pointed facts about trade war and the results of trade war. When you hear what the results of trade war are, it's actually chilling to think about it. And most Americans today, and I think probably we would be the only ones who would understand the significance of protectionism and trade war. I don't think the world does when they hear what's going on in the news right now. It was on Friday where we were all listening very closely to the news as we were sitting listening to sermons. And the answer is we didn't pay much attention to what happened on Friday. But again, we had a 2.5% drop in the Dow Jones. The Dow Jones is the one mainly used with the major broadcasting associations. So that's why I say Dow Jones. It's one of those indicators. Maybe not the best, but it's a good basic one. So when you have a 2.5% drop and you have a 24,000 market, that's 240 points and another 240 points and another half of that. So you're getting close to an 800-point drop. Is that about what it dropped? 800 points, I suppose? And, of course, that affects the markets, doesn't it? And what you have is traders who are in the pit, and they paid to get there, and they're quite experienced, but they're in the pit, they're trading, and you have the average guy out in the field who has bought some stocks when the market, Dow Jones, hit 24,000, thinking, well, now I'm safe. They didn't get it in at 14,000. The market did go up about 40%, I think, this last year, wasn't it? Somewhere along those lines. As I know, we were asked if we wanted to get in the stock market at 14,000. And I basically said, no, I'm good with 1% for right now. You know, I may die tomorrow. So, but the point is that from 14,000 to 24,000, but, you know, because of gravity, actually because of the emotion that gets into the market, and there's only two basic emotions in the market. One is fear and one is greed. Basically, when you look at it, you know, from a human nature standpoint of view. But people also get scared and they don't want to get into the market very soon, so they get in late and then the market starts dropping and you have a limit down with major stocks. They're not allowed to drop more than so many points. And then there's overnight trading before trading even opens in the United States. And oftentimes, it opens limit down within seconds. It's just, it's what's happened here. You want to get out of something because it is dropping so quickly. And then another day goes by and it drops quickly. And another day goes by. I remember back, my father was in the futures market. Did very well. He pretty much stayed in cattle because he's in Montana and the guys know cattle really well. So he would go down, he would trade the cattle. And they said, Floyd, don't put a stop in because they'll come down and they'll take it out and then the market will go right up. So you just stay right here. And he did. And he did some day trading. Not a lot. He was smart enough to not get in it, you know, hands and feet. But anyway, he did. There was a futures trade. I remember back in the 80s, and basically the safe trades mostly are seasonal trades, but even they can go awry. There was the lumber market, and this is not the only market that where it happens, but it will limit down one day, limit down another day, limit down another day, limit down another day. I think it would limit down 5 days in a row. And people couldn't get out of it. And finally, if they just happened to have somebody that's going to buy at the wrong time because they thought it dropped enough, then this one friend of mine got out. But it's just amazing when you hear what's happening. So what we have then is our people losing money, and guess what? They're not buying as many products. So it's a domino effect with the market in the United States. It's a worse effect internationally when you get into a trade war. But a trade war does upset markets, and they go down because people get very frightened. Well, Deuteronomy 28. Here's what God promised if we were an obedient nation. Deuteronomy 28. This is in the subtitle here, Promised Blessings for Obedience. It shall come to pass if you diligently obey the voice of the Lord your God to observe carefully all his commandments which I command you today, that the Lord your God will set you high above all the nations of the earth. So this is the way that we become a great nation. And President Trump wanted to make America great again. And we'll see in a moment the statistics back in about 1977 concerning the trade deficit compared to today. And if you think it was bad back in 1977, and much of that trade deficit was because we were importing gasoline and oil. Now we're not importing that much gasoline and oil. Any, I suppose some. But we are virtually independent. And yet when you take a look at the trade deficit today, without the oil and gas imports from Saudi Arabia, basically, you think we would really have been in a much tougher situation today if that hadn't changed. But here you see then that all these blessings, if we were obedient, the president rightly wants fair trade. But it's not going to happen at all because of the immorality that's in the nation. And you remember a sermon that I gave, and I did go to Deuteronomy 28, where God said, and of course we don't know anything of ourselves, but when we read the scriptures and we see what's happening with the immorality of the world and in this nation, you realize that we're not going to be blessed. All these blessings shall come upon you and overtake you because you obey the voice of the Lord your God. In other words, no human being can turn it around. Even though they have the best intentions, the best negotiating skills, they just absolutely cannot turn it around based on the disobedience of our nation. You'll be blessed in the city and in the country, the fruit of your body, your flocks, your cattle, verse 4, your basket and your kneading bowl, verse 5, when you come in and when you go out, verse 6, the Lord will cause your enemies who rise against you to be defeated before your face. But I don't have to continue in that too much because we can read the continual blessings that God is going to give to us. But you think, well, what about all of these other nations? We're looking at China right now. It was Japan again back in the 1970s, but we're looking at China now. And we think, well, they're not a Christian nation. Why is God going to be using a nation that is just as immoral as we are to hurt us? Because they will be involved in that, in a trade war especially, along with other nations. And why would God allow that? And the answer is, well, we are God's chosen people. God dealt with us from the beginning. And he has given us these commandments. The United States, no doubt, or with little doubt, probably is the biggest purchasers of Bibles in the world. And so God says, I expect more from you. The book of Habakkuk tells it all when it comes to why, God, are you allowing a more wicked nation than us to come in and defeat us, to destroy us? And the answer is, God's perspective is that if we disobey, then he is going to punish us. The other nations are not going to get away with murder, literally. God will punish them also. For example, Isaiah 10. But Assyria would be the rod of God's anger, and then God would destroy Assyria. So, coming back to this article, this is a Plain Truth magazine, April 1978. In January, the governments of Japan and the United States, just fill in the word China here and you almost have exactly the same rhetoric, reached a temporary truce in what was building up to be the most serious trade dispute since before the Second World War. And that's why this was so important 33 years later. Special U.S. trade negotiator Robert Strauss called the agreement a farther-reaching result than we had anticipated. The Japanese agreed to significant concessions demanded by the United States, among them advanced tariff reductions and on $2 billion of imports. Now, if we don't understand that, and I think that we do, but just to explain, you see what's happening now where we have said, with Chinese imports, we are going to levy a tax. It's a tariff tax. And by the way, they figure the deficit based on not only goods but also on services. So when you see a statistic, I think most of the time they're talking about goods only and not services. If you add services, you're going to add another 3/5 for sure to the trade deficit. You just absolutely will. So basically what you have here is that China is sending us their goods, and we say, look, it's not fair, so we can't compete with their goods, their imports coming in. We can't compete. So in order to compete, we're going to add a tax. And we're going to tax them 20, 25%. And now it's a little bit more in parity. It's a little more equal to what we sell the same goods for in the United States. Okay, that's the whole idea. So with two people, you know, what causes a trade deficit? Well, if Elgin Smith sells me something for $20 and I sell him something back for $10, who's ahead $10? So that would be what we're talking about here. So I'm going to say, look, you know, it's kind of hard to do when it's just one-on-one, but I'm going to add a tax to you. You have to come down from $20 to $15, and I'm going to go from $10 to $15 to get a fair trade here. And how do you think that's going to work? Nations are greedy. I know that you don't understand that. You think, oh, no, people aren't greedy and nations aren't greedy. Of course, we all understand that. We are. So who wants to have the comeuppance? You know, where do we want to win? We want the self to win, don't we? So China's not going to go with this. They're going to say, look, you know, we have a lot of bonds that we can cash in, and we have a lot of money where we can buy land in the United States, and we have already bought land in the United States. We're striving to own you, so you can't tell us what to do. Well, it is coming a time where there will be a trade war, and now it's what? It was $50 billion that we wanted to tax the Chinese. And so they said, well, we're going to tax your products so that the Chinese have to pay more for your products because we want them to buy our products, not yours. And so President Trump said, well, if you're going to be that way, we're going to move it up to $100 billion. And the Chinese said, okay, well, then we're going to do the same thing. It's going to be $100 billion. That's called a trade war. It just goes back and forth, back and forth. So this is what happened back in 1977 with the tariff reductions. Now, it goes on to say in this article, it's called From Trade War to Hot War is what it's called. The breakthrough in Tokyo may only prove to be a step back from the brink situation. Goes on to say, and elsewhere, all is not well for the free world's economic structure. The U.S. dollar has been eroding steadily, so we could talk about the dollar, but I won't do that at this time. But we come to the massive trade deficit. Back in 1977, the trade deficit was $26.7 billion. That's what it was. And that was, again, counting the deficit because of gas and oil. Now what do you think it is? What do you think our deficit is 40 years later? It's $566 billion. $566 billion. And if we count services, it's $810 billion. So you see what we're getting into. Now, we have other factors that are mentioned here. The common market at the time, this would be the European Union or the United States of Europe, we're wrestling at that time with a huge $5 billion trade deficit with Japan. You can bet that's been erased. The European Union is responsible for 15% of the world's trade traffic, 15%. And, of course, they are, I think, one of the only nations in Europe that would put the Europeans way ahead. When you think of the common market, if it weren't for the Germans, you would not have such a strong, strong market. But it's interesting what the UAW president said back in 1977. He was talking about protectionism. He was talking about the tax bills that were going through Congress. I think at that time, from what I remember reading here, there were 180 trade bills that were going through the House of Representatives back in 1977 or 81. It was that period of time. And there were 30 trade bills that were different going through the Senate. So there are 210 trade bills on different commodities or services that were taking place at that time. So here's what it says going on. It said the UAW's President Douglas Fraser last week said, "We tried protectionism once before. We got Smoot-Hawley. We got the Depression. We got Hitler. And we got World War II." Now, that is a statement that really makes us think trade war is not the way to go. It is just not the way to go. Because that's what happened prior to World War II, about 1935 is when the Smoot-Hawley bill went through. Now, I'll switch right over and come back to this, but it's interesting that when President Reagan was in office, this was 1981, when these bills were being attempted to be signed by the president going across his desk. Here's what President Reagan said. He said, well, here's what the article says, first of all, then there's a quote from him. "Mr. Reagan is painfully aware of where unbridled protectionism should lead." Unbridled protectionism. "In recently rejecting a protectionist plea from one industry, the president evoked memories of the Depression-era Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act," and that's what we just heard about. "Some of us remember the 1930s, he said, when the most destructive trade bill in history, the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act, helped plunge this nation and the world into a decade of depression and despair." And this is what he told a radio audience. He said, "From now on, if the ghost of Smoot-Hawley rears its ugly head in Congress, if Congress creates a depression-making bill, I'll fight it." Now, I can't remember that taking place. I don't remember that. I wasn't akin to it because I suppose the media wasn't as blaring as it is today. And, of course, we're going to hear about it because the media hates President Trump overall. They're trying to do everything to get him out of office. So we're going to hear of anything, everything false, half-truth, truth over the news media to try to negate his, put him out of office, you know, have him, well, I'm trying to think of the word right now. It's so simple words that you can't even think of. When they put a president impeached, yeah. Now, impeached doesn't mean he's guilty. Okay, I do know that. I think all of us know that, impeached. And why I didn't, it's part of peach. I was thinking of cherries and apples. I wasn't even thinking of those. But, so you get him impeached and then pass it with Republican Congress. I don't think that's possible. Whatever the case, they're doing everything to either impeach him or to make sure that the next round you would have someone else that would be president of the United States. So President Reagan knew what was happening. What did the Smoot-Hawley bill do? Well, in this different article by Prepare for Trade War, it says just how disastrous was the Smoot-Hawley bill. The devastating role it played in the Great Depression was explained in the September 5th issue of the Wall Street Journal in an article written by its editor, Robert L. Bartley. And that must have been about the same year, 1981. The stock market crash of 1929 came in the midst of debate in Congress over tariff, wrote Mr. Bartley. It had spent the year adding item after item to the protection list. In mid-1930, the Smoot-Hawley bill became law with the highest tariffs in the nation's history. What might have been an ordinary correction turned into the Great Depression. As the international accounts closed down, the world economy choked. So basically, you have no trading going on, or very little trading going on. And on top of everything else that was taking place in the United States, God was hitting this nation pretty hard with a famine. You remember the dirt in Montana that fell on the land? Actually, I think it was the dirt in Kansas, maybe, that ended up in New York City. And when we were in Bermuda several years ago, this was in about 1996 when we were over there in 1995, they said the soil in Bermuda is the same as in Missouri. So it's interesting. You wonder how much blew over there into Missouri. But it blew out into the Atlantic Ocean by tons and tons. And whether that's true or not, again, I don't know. But they said it's the same. So again, what we have then is a repeat of history. When we are blind to the past, we make the same mistakes. And now it's been, since the 1930s, 88 years later, and we have a generation that hardly knows anything about what took place. Congressmen, that's what I'm talking about, the generation that is serving us so well, you know, our politicians. But again, they're blinded to the past. During the Reagan era, I think things kind of slowed down. Japan went down. They didn't continue to go up. The major trading nations, your big trading nations right now, if you would talk to your telephone and ask the question, they would say that it's the EU and China and not Japan, the United States. Japan's out of it. They're not in the running. Then you see all these smaller countries. But the big ones would be the European Economic Community and then the United States and China. And China, if you look at it, overall is the largest when you look at services and goods. They're right up there. It's pretty close, but I think they're the winner. Now, there are several articles here. I'm going to go back to the one that I was reading from in the beginning and just read two quotes from it. But in quoting, this was back in 1977, in quoting the AFL-CIO president, George Meany, at the time, he referred to the very, very real possibility that the AFL-CIO will swing its lobbying machinery for 1978 behind new restrictive legislation. He said a government trade policy predicated on old ideas of free trade is worse than a joke. It is a prescription for the disaster. The answer is fair trade. Now, in actuality, if we have fair trade now, that's going to be a disaster. That's where the disaster is going to come. Now, it doesn't make sense to us, does it? It's like the nation should all get along. And there shouldn't be a winner and a loser. But why do you go into business? Why does a nation go into business? We go in to make more money than the other guy. And they don't care if the other guy makes some money, but they want to be the winners. But you can't have a nation coming in and saying, okay, we want it fair, and we want it fair within 5 years, 7 years. We want to make sure that everything is fair. China has gone from a nation in 1987, basically a horse and buggy nation, to what you see right now, a very high-tech nation. And I saw an article the other day, I think it was in the latest Discern magazine, where it said, oh, I know what it was. You get imprimis. If you you get this imprimis print out, it's a college, a very conservative college, that does not depend on government aid. But in imprimis, it said, basically, we are dependent on Chinese chips. That's not cow chips. This is technology chips. We are dependent on them. We cannot function without their chips. They are so advanced in that technology. Now, I suppose given enough time, we could come up to that. But they have a lot more graduates working in that field than we do. And they're way ahead of us. So we are already, we are a military might that no one can beat. We know that. But at the same time, the time could come where they just refuse to send us whatever it takes to fix our equipment. So, again, I don't know all the ins and outs of that, but we are pretty dependent on Japan. And then the last article that I see here, this was 1977 once again, quoting Mr. Willy Brandt of West Germany. Some of you remember him. When he was in office, he was the German former chancellor. It is deplorable, he said, the poison of protectionism is especially gaining ground in the United States, including the parts of the trade union movement. He said, I can see similar signs in other parts of Europe. This should come as no surprise to longtime Plain Truth readers, we go on to say, since the early 1950s, the editors of this magazine have warned that a devastating trade war would erupt among the free world economies, that as a result of the breakdown of international commerce and the real possibility of a worldwide economic depression, the very fabric of the post-World War II alliance structure would be ripped apart. And so that's what we're going to see. It just is on the horizon. The average person on the street does not know. Can you imagine if everybody believed that, what would happen to the stock market? And the answer, it would plummet. So what do we have? The latest I have here is a report from Life, Hope, and Truth from Mike Bennett. And it's how the Japanese look at us. It's a report from the Asia Times. And it's called Post-U.S. World-Born in Phnom Penh. That's an area or a city in Asia. He said, it is symptomatic of the national condition of the United States. This is from the Asia Times now. Here's what they're thinking. And this is back in 2012, November 2012. It was just when President Obama had just been reelected. So that would be the time frame. It is symptomatic of the national condition of the United States that the worst humiliation suffered by it as a nation and by a U.S. president personally. This is from their point of view over in Asia. Passed almost without comment last week, I refer to the November 20th announcement at a summit meeting in Phnom Penh that 15 Asian countries or nations, comprising half the world's population, would form a regional comprehensive economic partnership excluding the United States. Now, it didn't turn out to be as bad as he stated, but our negotiations with them, in fact, it says they threw a party and nobody showed up. The President Obama threw a party and nobody showed up. So when you start thinking of the prophecies in the Bible, we recognize, and we'll go to Daniel here for a few moments, and we do have a clock up there. In Daniel, we'll end with a few scriptures here that bring us back to what is happening at the end time. And you think of beast powers in all of this. So we'll go from Daniel 12 to Revelation 17. But we have the end time in verse 40. This is Daniel. I said Revelation 17 we'd go to, where Daniel 11 is where we are right now. Daniel 11 and verse 40. At the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him. And we think that's a group that would be a confederacy with Egypt. There's actually a psalm on this. And the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind with chariots, horsemen, many ships. And we've always stated that would be the Germany, the Assyrians of old, the European economy or the military that is forming over in northern Europe. He shall enter the countries, overwhelm them, and pass through. And then he enters the glorious land. Many countries are overthrown. A couple countries escape. He stretches out his hand against the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. He shall have power over the treasures of gold and silver all the way down to Egypt. News from the east and the north shall trouble him. Now, this is what we're looking at here with these 15 Asian nations back in 1977. So you know that they're together. If we think that China and North Korea are our enemies, then, of course, we have another think coming. They are not. These are the same people. These are cousins of one another is what they are, just like we are cousins of Canada and Australia and some of the other sons of Jacob. So we look at this and we say, you know, what is forming is a trade block. If a trade block is disrupted, there is going to be problems in the entire world. And we'll come to that in a moment. But you have here then, out of the north and the east, you have these Asian countries that are going to go to war with the king of the north, and maybe now they've included the king of the south with them, who knows, but they're in Jerusalem, and because of what's coming out, the news that's coming out very quickly of what's happening in Asia, this would be probably Cambodia, Vietnam, India probably would be included in all of this, but you can just think of Japan, China for sure. You can think of all these countries and what's happening. North Korea, South Korea. One general said, don't kid yourself, the major desire of North Korea is to disrupt the friendship between South Korea and the United States. It's one of our generals. That's a main desire of North Korea. And so we'll see what happens there. So if they become friendly with North Korea, that is, if South Korea and North Korea, who are brothers, basically become friendly, then what do you have? They may not need the United States at all anymore. And the military would be kicked out. You wouldn't have a border problem anymore. So this is what's happening here. And you think now this is the beast power down there. And what has taken place by the time this transpires? Well, we go to Revelation 17. Revelation 17. And we think in terms of beast power and the Asians, what happened with Adolf Hitler and his relationship with the Soviet Union back in 1941? It was June of, was it 40 or 41, when you have Germany attacking Russia. But before that, what did you have? Before that, you had a peace treaty with Stalin. And I think all of us kind of remember that. So Stalin was basically hands off. He wasn't going to touch the beast. And so what we have, and I believe that the beast was influenced, probably totally controlled by Satan the devil himself. I think that myself, I don't know, but it was a very high-powered demon. But when you come to chapter 17, let's kind of fit some of these things together. You have in chapter 17, the great harlot who sits on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth committed fornication, made drunk with the wine of her desires, her fornication. Maybe I already said it here today. Since I gave the sermon this morning, sometimes I repeat myself thinking, did I say this already, or was that about 5 hours ago that I said this? Basically what we have is the greatest lust that you can think of is usually fornication or adultery, right? And you see in James chapter 4, it says, you adulterers and adulteresses, which is just kind of a principle of extreme, extreme lust. And this is what it's talking about. Not that here you have these powers that are responsible for all the fornication in the world, but they're responsible for all the greed and the lust that is going on, including the lust for money. So he carried me away with the spirit. I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast. So you have a woman sitting on a scarlet beast. The beast would be like Adolf Hitler, but the woman is controlling this beast. You find the woman is Mystery Babylon the Great, verse 5. You find the beast is one of many. Verse 11 says the beast that was and is not is of the eighth, or is the eighth and is of the seventh and is going to perdition. So it's a line of beasts, all connected one with the other. So you go back as far as you can with the beast powers, and you see that they rise, they fall, they rise, they fall, they rise, they fall. And finally, you have Hitler coming along. He rises and he falls, but he makes a treaty with the Asian nations. And that treaty is not broken by Russia. If you can count them, it's Eurasia, of course. They're part of the Asian area. It is Hitler that breaks the treaty with them. So what you have here now is the woman who's sitting on the beast, and the beast is going to rise. And what happens to the beast when this next beast rises? Are they going to negotiate a peace treaty with Asia? You know, I had said, and I remember talking to Bernard Longhibler, it's been a couple of years, that the entire earth is going to go along with the beast. But, you know, the more I thought about it, I thought, well, they may make peace with the beast. I don't think they're going to come under the total sway of the beast's power, because you have a whole group that's going to attack the beast. But they'll have a peace treaty with the beast. That makes more sense. Because how are you going to get the Hindus, if this guy is Christian, I use that term loosely, if the beast is promoted by the false prophet who would be a Christian? You see where I'm going with this. If it would be the Roman Catholic Church, and I don't see why it wouldn't be, then why would they go along with and come under the control of the beast? In fact, I think there's going to be a treaty with the beast, is what it's going to be. And when they get too powerful, now you have the Asian countries coming in, and they are going to go to war with the beast. And we know that that's going to happen. And that's the time of Armageddon. And so we come down here now and we see that verse 16. Let's come down to verse 16. Now remember what we have here at this time. You have a beast controlled by Babylon. And the beast is someone like Adolf Hitler. Someone is keeping him from doing what he wants to do. And we find then the 10 horns, which you saw on the beast, hate the harlot. And who is the harlot? We read it in verse 5. Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots, and she is the great harlot. So the 10 horns hate the harlot. That harlot rides the beast, controls the beast, is what that means. When you're sitting on top of a horse, you have the reins, and you see this illustration where you have the woman with the reins on top of this beast, and she's in control. But you have the 10 nations who hate the harlot, and they make her desolate and naked. They eat her flesh and burn her with fire. God has put it into their hearts to fulfill his purpose, to be of one mind, to give their kingdom to the beast. And what would happen then? Well, the beast now, with the harlot gone, because she's destroyed. It just says that. I mean, how else? What else can we read here? A time of the end. Now, how many months, years before Christ returns, you find what it says right here. The harlot that rides the beast is destroyed. And then they give power to the beast. When that harlot is destroyed, you see now Revelation 18. Revelation 18 talks about the destruction of Babylon. So when you have the 10 nations join the beast, you've got a different economy, because the economy is destroyed. There's no buying, there's no selling anymore with the Babylonish system, whatever that is. And what we find back in Revelation 13 is the following. Revelation 13. Starting out here in, this would be verse 16. He causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand. This is Revelation 13 and verse 16. Verse 16. There you go. When everybody starts looking at each other like, where's he going with this? I realize I didn't say everything specifically. So verse 16. He causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads, and that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Now the beast has total power. That total power does not come for buying and selling, for merchandising, until you have the destruction of Babylon. That's why the 10 kings destroy Babylon. They give him all. You have economic power around the world, and you have power. We have it right now. We have tremendous power. We really do. Someone, I thought, said it right. You think of a steamroller, a big roller, and you just picture this massive roller. This is the United States. Back in 1970, the United States couldn't be stopped. So we are so big, we are so powerful, and we really are, that it takes such a long time to slow us down. So if you take out a rolling machine, you know, you knock out the driver, so to speak, it's still going to roll a while. And I think we got off the gold standard in about 1960. I wish I would have bought a lot of gold for $30 an ounce. That would have been great back in those times. But what is gold right now? $1,200 an ounce? But that's foresight, and I'm not too foresightable, I guess. But what we see then is this beast that has this power, and nobody can war against it. Verse 4, who is able to make war against this beast? Now, what do we do in this case? So we see what's going on. We see trade war coming. We see that it's going to cause probably a depression and bring on eventually World War III. Bring on Hitler, World War III. I thought what was said by the president of that one union was very good. It had some insight, I think. And it's going to happen again based on what we read in prophecy. And the United States is going to go down. We are going to be hated among all nations. So what do we do? The last scripture here is in Revelation 13, 10 and 14, 12. Anyone who hears, verse 9, anyone who has an ear, okay, verse 10. He who leads into captivity shall go into captivity. This is chapter 13 and verse 10. He who kills with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and faith of the saints. And it's like, what? It's like, where is it taking us here? Well, why didn't it finish the sentence? Well, it took another chapter to finish the sentence. That's why I have an arrow here in my Bible from verse 10, chapter 13, down to chapter 14 and verse 12. Here is the patience of the saints. Here are those who keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. Faith means all of this is going to happen, and when we see it happening, we're not going to be surprised because we have faith that God's word is true and will come to pass. And we know then, during the period of time, we continue to keep the commandments, which the beast is not going to promote, because we know what 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 says. That the lawless one comes. And this is the false prophet who's promoting the image of the beast, and he is a man of lawlessness. So we have faith in what God says, and we continue to keep the commandments of God in the faith of Jesus. So I think that helps us kind of get an idea of the foreboding news that we hear concerning trade war and the implications of a trade war actually taking place. Now, is it going to take place in the next month? Does it take time? Does it take from 1929 to the middle of the 1930s to really get bad? And the answer is, yeah, it's going to take some time. But let's all do what the Bible says and be patient, have faith, and continue to keep God's commandments.